stuff that I think I that you may be interested in, I hope. I'd love to hear from you if you have any area of health or a medical subject that you'd like me to cover on The Doctor's Inn. So you could, if you wanted, you could contact me about that request at my email address, which is klogan.md@yahoo.com. And so that's the letter K, K, and then L-O-G-A-N-M-D, M-D. So klogan.md@yahoo.com. The opinions voiced on The Doctor's Inn do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. They're my opinions. underwriters, I know. Let me speak to you about some people who underwrite, thank goodness, this radio station and The Doctor's Inn. It's made possible by you, the generous contributions made from KZFR supporters like you, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council since 2001. Friends of the Arts creates economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and by publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or to have your event listed, visit friendsoftheart.net. And I don't know if it's .net or .com, but friendsoftheart.something. And by Drunken Dumpling in Chico, first created as a food cart. Drunken Dumpling is now a dine-in restaurant serving locally sourced, fresh, homemade Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Details on Facebook, Instagram, and at drunkendumplingchico.com. Drunken Dumpling, where they love food, flavor, and our community. And by D.A. Lampe Construction, a proud supporter of KZFR and community radio in Northern California. For more information, visit D.A. Lampe, and Lampe is L-A-M-P-E, construction. So visit dalampeconstruction.com. All right. So here we go, or here I go, and I hope it's we, listeners and me. Today I want to talk about something that has been on my mind for the last 40 or 50 years, and that's the functioning and the dysfunctioning of our healthcare system. And I'm going to get somewhat, and I'm going to break it down into the core, the bottom, the root, the soul, get to the bottom of this thing called healthcare system, and see if we can put our heads together on this. And I'm going to look at a couple other countries, not the countries you've heard me talk about or heard others talk about relative to, you know, industrialized nations with universal health care or something like that. Nope, I'm going to pick two other countries. Please listen up for that. My personal experience with health care system, besides being a consumer in this country, before I became a family doctor, I actually was a hospital corpsman in the Navy. And then a licensed vocational nurse, and then a family physician. Part of my work currently, by the way, is to function as a physician. Speaking of looking at our healthcare system and some of the dysfunction of our healthcare system, some of what I do now is each Sunday afternoon, we in Chico have a free clinic, the Shalom Free Clinic. And that's definitely a place, as you can imagine, where I'm able to see failures in our healthcare system. So let me say this first. When we're looking at our healthcare system right now on The Doctor's Inn, one thing I want us to keep in mind, in the back of our minds, is what we want our healthcare system to really function like, to look like and to function like. There's ideas floating around, by the way, of how to change the system, such as a single-payer system or Medicare for All system, and I agree with that. But I'm talking about going beyond that right now in our minds. Imagine in our minds, look around us, and look elsewhere, for instance, elsewhere in the world, which we're going to look at. One of them, I'm hoping you're going to be as equally impressed as I am. Now I want us to all look, again, break it down and look deeper. Look at the heart of our healthcare system, the overall milieu, how about that word, of our healthcare system, including the center of it, the core of it, the soul of it. And today, in a few minutes, it's going to include us looking into some facts about two other countries, like I was saying. Currently, we sit here in the middle of our healthcare system, the one that we have, the one that it's the only one we've ever known. It's the only one we have ever experienced. It's the way, as far as we know, right? But, all right, hang tight here. So, the healthcare milieu, partly sitting in my brain right now, has to do with the entirety of healthcare in the whole world as a thing. And it includes me looking at the subject as it has been over the last few decades, especially in a couple of countries. Let's do some definitions here first. Healthcare, what's that mean? So it means different things to different people, right? But I want us to get on the same page for this discussion right now. Using the term as a medical doctor, a physician, you know, is one thing, but and there's all the other professionals, hospitals, technologies, prescriptions, and everything. But I want us to all, you know, shake all that off, and let's think of the root term of healthcare. It has to do with one's health and well-being, and we're talking about a system here. Therefore, let's look at what would be our common shared goal for our healthcare system. Let's see what that might be. I suspect we might agree that the overall goal of our healthcare system would be for attaining the best health and well-being for yourself and for others, for all of us. For attaining the best health and well-being for all of us. For us as individuals and as the us as a community and a country and a world. So, our shared healthcare system goal is to attain the best health and well-being for the people. I'm starting out by looking at this thing goal together. I don't want us to forget that goal as we talk further into this, and especially when we look at these other two countries' examples. The goal of attaining the best healthcare is the goal. Before I go any further, I keep saying that, don't I? Sorry. Before I go any further, I want to be sure we're all on the same page about another fact. Listen to this fact that I want us to be on the same page of. And that's that money is not this main goal of our healthcare system, correct? We already talked about what our goal of the healthcare system is, and money isn't that goal. In other words, a healthcare system existence is not for the attainment of profit and wealth for anyone. It's to attain the best health and well-being for the people being served by that system, right? If the subject was money and profit and the obtaining of more and more money, that'd be a whole different subject, and there would be many varied ways a person or persons could go about that. You know, varied ways to figure out how to make money and invest and do all sorts of things. Well, healthcare system or healthcare goal of healthcare isn't that. So, again, money attainment is not the overall basic underlying goal for healthcare system, but rather the goal of healthcare system is obtaining the best health and well-being for other people. This is in and of itself, that's not a complicated concept. And I'm saying this right now, beware of anyone who might move away from that underlying main goal of attainment of healthcare is the main goal and look into the money thing, because after all, as a goal, the money thing as a goal of the system, Because remember, we are human beings. And as human beings, there's some human nature stuff. And that's what I'm going to get into. I'm going to look at that right now because we got to define this. Let's put it all right out in front of us, what's going on. We humans are a complex species, right? You know, and the main thing that sets us apart from other species is our opposable thumb, right? Well, okay, maybe it's not just our opposable thumb. It's our brain. Our brain sets us apart from other species. And in my opinion, there's certainly pros and cons to that distinction. That is, pros and cons to the brain thing that we have. It's a complex and, you know, wonderful, beautiful thing. Don't get me wrong. However, on the other hand, there's a dark and worrisome side to this brain of humans, this part, some parts of human nature. This worrisome side of our brain can have a predilection for power over others, other living things and other human beings, of course, and a predilection for wealth and money. And also, of course, a human human desires can lead to, you know, distinct disregard for our environment, complete disregard or disregard for other people, and greed and an unquenchable desire for more money. Think about it. Has anybody, you've heard, we've all heard about even something like as unbelievable as a COVID situation that we're in now. The COVID situation throughout the world. Billionaires making more and more and more money. And one billionaire, I guess he's the second richest man in the world, during the COVID pandemic, creates a company to make a rocket ship to take himself up and look back at the Earth from way up in the boonies above Earth. Waste the money that away. You know what I'm saying? It's unbelievable. This is the dark side. The dark side of our brain. Predilection for greed and power and... I'm going to talk about some other terms that are the opposite of that in a minute when it comes to caring nature, I hope, of healthcare. But first of all, you were wondering why I bring up this dark side of the human brain. What's it got to do with our healthcare system? Well, let's look at that right now. Remember, I hope we're on the same page that our common goal of our system would be for the best health and well-being for us relative to our healthcare system. But now let's look at the dysfunction of our system and how it gets in the way for attainment of that goal. I say it's that desire for money and that disregard for others. It's the dark side. Okay, let's look at the other side, the original side. The healthcare, you know, for people like me and other healthcare professionals who get into the business of healthcare, I hope for some of these reasons before the dark side of our brain grabs them, we've got to always come back to what we're remembering what our brain started with when we were first getting into being a doctor or other healthcare related things or the studying of things such as infections and the development of vaccines and the development of other medications. And then that's all great and it's a good thing. And I'm going to say some words that tell about those positive aspects of character qualities that lead to that. But then the dark side grabs and money greed takes over. So let's list some other words here. Altruism, compassion, caring about others, and caring for others. As healthcare professionals, as a healthcare professional myself, these are characteristics that I hope are part of me and stay as a part of me throughout my life as a healthcare professional. I actually expect these characteristics in other healthcare professionals. However, remember the dark side, unquenchable desire for more money is present. In my opinion, those are not characteristics that I feel should be part of my life. And as a physician, I don't wish those characteristics upon myself or any other healthcare professional. They are characteristics that are contrary to the whole inner soul of what a healthcare system should embody. They're contrary to the very core of what the essence of healthcare system, our healthcare system, should be. I was just reading now. Let me tell you about this. I was just reading an article about healthcare in China over the years from the 1980s to around 2012. So the 1980s to about 2012. And in a minute, I'm going to talk about Cuba. But now back to China. The first healthcare in China apparently worsened. You know, it was going on and on, and there was the barefoot doctor kind of thing, and there was healthcare even out into the rural areas, and people cared for each other, and it was, you know, it was as it was, and it was pretty good. But then the Chinese government, around the 1980s and early 90s, they said, whoa, they found that their healthcare numbers and their healthcare overall in their country was going down the tubes, or down. And so the government why was that, you would wonder? Well, the downfall of their healthcare coincided with China's morphing, or pseudo morphing, into a form of capitalism or pseudo capitalism, you know, where it even included, I didn't know this, but it even included a multitude of health insurance organizations. So that were for profit. And so they went from a system where their government was responsible for the health care availability for everyone to a system, by the time of the 1980s and 90s rolled around, where most people were responsible for navigating what became a complicated, expensive system themselves. Apparently, their federal government woke up to that fact about 10 to 15 years ago and establishing, again, a coordinated universal healthcare system, both rurally and urbanly. The bottom line was that the battle for money in this pseudo-capitalistic healthcare fiasco that came about led to that demise in their system. And the goal of the health was taken over by the goal of making more money. And their healthcare system fell behind, became somewhat dysfunctional, apparently. Resuming a universal, government-responsible healthcare system brought them out of that dysfunction, apparently. Remember this human nature thing, the dark side, issues of greed, power, and money. Fortunately, however, for them, their federal government was reminded of their healthcare system goal, of attaining health and well-being for their people of their country and how to reach that goal. And so they went through some changes. And again, that was 10 or 15 years ago. Now, you want to hear a stark example of this, and an impressive example of this. We'll go to Cuba. It's impressive. Where I got this information was from a healthcare about their healthcare story was from an American journal, actually, American Journal of Public Health, from the American Public Health Association, and it's an article from 2012. And I'm going to tell you the story a bit, and this is information from people, including one. I'll tell you the specifics of who the two people who wrote this article, but let me just say a brief thing now that they know what they're talking about because they were one of them was there in the thick of it. So first of all, let's look at Cuba as our close neighbor, close geographically anyway. But yet for the last 60 years or so, they've been living in what I personally describe as some kind of draconian embargo, or actually multiple embargoes, in an attempt to isolate them and their people. Our federal government has been doing this for 60 years or so. And you'd say, what's up with that? This close neighbor, this island country, why are we doing that? What's up with that? It's embarrassing to me. Putting the stranglehold on the Cuban people for 60 years, not because they attacked us or any other practical common sense reason. You know what I'm saying? But it's something that's it has to involve some kind of bizarre lobbying and from moneyed interests, elitists, political entities, maybe even from Florida that are thick out in Florida. You know how bizarre Florida politics are? Well, I can no longer be surprised about Florida politics. Anyway, it's been going on for 60 years. It's beyond belief in my mind relative to our Cuba, how we treat Cuba. Anyway, we don't treat any other country that way. And, you know, so Cuba has we'll talk in a minute about this, but so Cuba has a government type that we don't agree with, that we don't do in our country. Ours needs some work. But nonetheless, but what? If we put embargoes on all and didn't have trade with all other countries in the world that we disagree with our government on, we would just be, anyway, it just doesn't make any sense what we're doing in Cuba. So let's talk about the history of Cuba, fairly recent history. In 1959, Cuba was essentially a fully capitalistic society, similar and through the influence of the United States and themselves, the elitists there. It was a money-based society, of course, like the United States, and involved the United States, and it involved companies from the United States. They were all part of the life in Cuba. Then in 1959, there was a change of government in Cuba, what they call a revolution, and their president at the time, Florencio Batista, was forced out of office. And a man named Fidel Castro became president. And Cuba became a socialist society. The United States is not open to the idea of a socialistic society and government in Cuba. And so, and by the way, oh, guess what? Cuba is not part of the United States. It's not a holding of the United States. It's an independent country. Duh. It's not a possession of the U.S. However, it appears to me that our federal government, our U.S. federal government, has never been able to accept the idea that Cuba is an independent country. It's a bizarre stance for our country to take. But the money and the flow of money and our money and corporation money in Cuba just has to be playing a major role in this, the way we treat Cuba. Okay, now let's look at the healthcare of Cuba. Again, this is all from an article from the U.S. Public Health Journal, written by an American physician named C. That is the letter C, and then the next his middle name William, last name Keck. So Dr. Keck, K-E-C-K, M.D., and he has a master's also in public health. He was the former director of health for the city of Akron, Ohio, and he's a professor emeritus in the Department of Family and Community Medicine in a medical school in Akron, Ohio. I think I didn't write down the name of the medical school, but I think it's something like Northeastern Ohio Medical School, something like that. Anyway, also participating in the writing of this article is Gail Reed, R-E-E-D. She has a master's degree as well. she was, at least at that time, executive editor, and this is an article from 2012. And at least at that time, she was the executive editor of a journal called Medic Review, M-E-D-I-C-C Review, and she was, here's the important thing, the international director of something called, and this is the international director of something called Medical Education Cooperation with Cuba at Havana, Cuba. So in 1959, they tell us, in a stepwise fashion over the next 18 to 20 years, from 1959 over the next 18 to 20 years, Cuba developed a very impressive, appropriately functional healthcare system, a universal healthcare system. And get this, listen to this piece. So remember, that started in 1959, and they, you know, over 15, 20 years, they developed it. And it led to also this fact that in 1976 in Cuba, they enumerated in their constitution a set of specific principles that are amazing. They, as part of their enumerated in their constitution, specific principles relating to healthcare and government and all relative to healthcare. Get this. I'm going to read these off to you. Listen to this. First, healthcare is a right available to all people equally and free of charge. Next, the assurance of healthcare for all people is essentially the responsibility of the federal government. Next, preventative and curative services are integrated, meaning that preventative care, in other words, prevention of disease, infectious disease, and preventing of disease and ongoing chronic illnesses such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and other things, heart disease. Preventative care was an integral part of the function of their healthcare system, working hand in hand out in all aspects out into the rural. You'll hear more about it in a minute here. Next, the public participates in the healthcare system's development and functioning. It's not just the federal government putting this together. It's not just healthcare professionals or healthcare professional organizations putting this together. It's a milieu. It's a joined effort, including the public participants. Next, healthcare activities are integrated. Healthcare activities are integrated with economic and social development in the communities, with these economic and social factors also being integrated into the healthcare system function. And lastly, global health cooperation is a fundamental obligation of the healthcare system and of its professionals in their healthcare system. Global health cooperation is a fundamental obligation of their system and the professionals in that system of healthcare. And you may have heard over the years how Cuba sends physicians and other health professionals to different places in the world where there's a need for healthcare, such as disasters, etc. I don't know if you've paid attention to that, but keep your ears open. You'll hear it. I've heard it over the years. So, Cuba started out with the goal of extending healthcare services and began training additional healthcare professionals and putting them to work under a unified healthcare system called, they put this system together called the Rural Medical Service, supplying these physicians and other healthcare professionals into those rural areas of the country where healthcare access has actually been significantly lacking. And I'm going to tell you, here's some evidence of that. I'm going to tell you in a minute. But remember, prior to 1959, their healthcare system was money-based, capitalistic society type. And part of that meant that, for instance, Havana is the big city in that. I think it's the capital and it's the biggest city. There was fair healthcare there. But guess what? Not in any of the rest of the country. Check this out. There was hospitals in Havana. As far as the rest of the country, one hospital outside of Havana. Before 1959, there weren't even any. There was only one hospital outside of Havana. And within the 10 years after 1959 revolution, they added 53 hospitals were built and supplied throughout the remainder of the country. They, in other words, supplied the rest of their country people with accessible health care, including hospitals. These practitioners in these rural areas began melding together public health issues along with clinical medicine, things such as taking care of chronic disease and acute disease, while also public health things were integrated into it. Their jobs were also to teach their fellow Cubans about issues of prevention, including infectious disease such as malaria, which I'll tell you more about in a minute, or just tell you a little bit about in a minute. The training of healthcare professionals, both doctors and nurses, began changing also. Under the responsibility of a newly established entity in the country called the Ministry of Public Health. And get this, this education for doctors and later on nurses was free of tuition, with the only prerequisite being academic achievement, not money. I, at the free clinic in Chico on Sunday afternoons, we have many students who volunteer there from Chico State, California State University, Chico, who are pre-med, pre-MD, pre-DO, pre-PA or pre-physician assistant, even some pre-nursing students from Chico State, California State University, Chico. The issue of, number one, getting accepted into schools, and the massive, massive amount of money that it takes to go through school, undergraduate, and then on, hopefully, to a professional school like medical school, DO school, or nursing school, or other schools such as naturopathic physician school. Naturopathic doctor, doctor of naturopathic medicine school. Anyway, those are very expensive. Well, gosh darn it, when healthcare system gets its correct hat on, such as in Cuba, the education was free. Only prerequisite is being their academic achievement. The medical school training and later even nursing school training was integrated with the rural communities, with those who were trained in those rural communities often staying there to function. Within the first few years after this was initiated, so the first few years after 1959, the health problems began improving significantly, such as the lowering of infant mortality from some poor levels to now better than the United States levels. And low birth weight babies, horrible before, now better than even in the United States. Improved life expectancy, so now are equal with the United States. Improvement in deaths from infectious disease also, such as AIDS and malaria. Really big on malaria, much improvement there. And actually including the, remember I said the social and environmental and cultural aspects of intertwining some of the healthcare changes and benefits. So the sustained sources of clean drinking water were also attained, and which attained. And that was also part of the healthcare achievements in the years shortly after that 1959 revolution. Early on, however, there were still some problems with access to healthcare, with long waits to see doctors, you know, and problems with coordination of care. So in 1974, Cuba established a model of care, and this is cool, something called the problems with you know, coordination of care and access to care in the rural communities, et cetera. They started this plan or program of what's called community-based polyclinics throughout their entire country. Polyclinics. And you'd say, polyclinics? I have a cousin named Polly, but yeah, polyclinics, what's going on there? P-O-L-Y, not the way my cousin Polly spelled her name. But anyway, polyclinics means that they're kind of a whole healthcare big picture attained by these rural clinics. In other words, they at least had, each of them had a general, you know, doctor, like a family doctor or internal medicine doc, something like that, a pediatrician, and an OBGYN doctor. That was standard, and I guess still is, standard in these poly clinics, in these multitude of clinics throughout the communities. And then smattering of specialties, depending on, and they kind of coordinate those in some groupings, apparently, depending on their hospital in their area, et cetera. And then some of them had dental care as well. So now, back to what I was talking about earlier about the goals of a healthcare system. And think about that with this Cuba thing that what they did. None of this was about making money. When they developed their improvement of their system, after the capitalistic thing was run out, and they started this their goals for the system changed to be one that functioning for the merits of the care of each other, and for the mutual, therefore, the mutual caring of each other, and not any merit on how much money someone could make in their medical business themselves or their medical business, or, you know, not having to make a lot of money to pay off medical school loan or nursing school loans. There was a different money wasn't the thing that got in the way and became a goal in and of itself, like our system. It was the care, the attaining of health care. That's the goal. And preventative care, the prevention of health conditions or complications to other chronic diseases, is an integral part of what is actually taught to both the healthcare professionals and also an integral part of what's taught to those who are being served by the healthcare system. And the figures relating to their health outcome accomplishments are amazing. Again, like the dropping significantly of their infant mortality rates and the low birth weights and life expectancy improvements and the wiping out of the malaria issue and the improvement of the AIDS care availability, et cetera. And this health care in Cuba is available to every single Cuban equally without a fee. So Cuba has actually become a model of excellence relative to the accomplishments of healthcare, and this being done over the last 50 to 60 years. 50 to 60 years of what they've also been going through, even though they've been going through this oppressive, nonsensical embargoes leveled against their people by their closest neighbor, us. The big, powerful, rich United States of America, where money rules. Cuba is an amazing story. Again, if you're interested in looking at that article about their healthcare system development, it's in American Journal of Public Health, which is a journal from the as part of the American function of the American Public Health Association, and it's from a 2012 article. Well, I guess I talked about Cuba and a little bit about China and a little bit about what our problem is. And let me just reiterate just the simple basic point there. Money, in order to obtain equal and appropriate health care and attainment of health care as the goal of a health care system, and to attain that, money, the making of money in the capitalistic for-profit system, didn't work in Cuba. It didn't work in China. They did away with it, as we should in this country. Hence, some system that does away with the profit motive, the profit thing, but actually, let's start with our goal to attain the best health care we can for every human and the best health care and well-being. Okay, let's do it, and let's take away the money issue, and let's do it with government assistance and have the public, like they did in Cuba, the public being part of the formulation and ongoing care running of it. And by the way, that's how single payer, this is many years ago in California Senate, Senator, what was her name? Anyway, she sponsored a single payer bill in California. I read that sucker, multiple pages, obviously. And when we set up a single payer form of healthcare structure and throw out the money for profit issue, yeah, you can set up panels that include people in the community. And guess what? Physicians, including, guess what? Primary care physicians as part of the panel. So people who are the consumers, people who are the primary care type physicians, and other categories of healthcare professionals. Anyway, if you're looking for group information or information where you could see different options and get involved with any elements of healthcare system change in this country, the one that I do know of that you could pull up online and dig around in is on the internet would be Physicians for National Health Program, PNHP. I'm a member of that organization. It's been going for, probably close to 30 years now, in the high 20s or close to 30 years. It's mostly healthcare professional physicians, mostly, but not all. There's many people who are not healthcare professionals in that organization, and you can be part of that organization and see what advice they have relative to changes that they advise relative to changing our healthcare system. And that's, again, PNHP, Physicians for National Health Program in the United States. If you have any questions about that or anything that I've already talked about and you wanted to hit me with a question, remember these. You could get my opinion if you wanted to on any of the subjects or you had a question. And anyway, my email address is klogan.md@yahoo.com. Something now. Let me shift a little bit. I wanted to say something a little bit about this little nasty virus called COVID. And I think the only thing that I'm going to say about it, I unfortunately don't have recent INLO numbers. The last numbers I saw were about INLO hospitals are, of course, for those who are listening outside the area. INLO is our local, in Chico, our local hospital. We only have one hospital in Chico. It's INLO. We were kind of hanging at about, as far as admissions, people in the hospital admitted who have COVID, we were adding about, and this is a 300-bed hospital, and we're not totally full now, it's to my knowledge. But anyway, that's roughly the size of the hospital. Anyway, we were at in the 50s, somewhere between 50 to 60 COVID patients. And, the number of those that are on ventilators, in other words, severe, we're tapering down with this Omicron virus. But, one to two people on ventilators. Remembering, like I always keep us all on the same page, that remember when we're talking about severity of COVID and the severity being the point that somebody needs a ventilator or a tube into their lungs and not a machine to keep them alive in order to be alive, about half of them people approximately half of those people die. So that's just because of the severity of the disease. So just That's where my brain goes in trying to think the big picture out. And, you know, more than 50% of those people, of course, entering the hospital have not had adequate or any, either inadequate or none, vaccinations for COVID. Still, even though COVID is infecting people who have been vaccinated lately as in the COVID variants we have now, remember, vaccinations important, very important for COVID. If you do get COVID, if you've been vaccinated, you're distinctly less likely to have severe disease, or certainly will have less severe disease. And even if you do require hospitalization, you're less likely to have the needed intubation and ventilator, and in other words, you're less likely to die. So vaccination for COVID, important. I advise, most of us advise now, the two-shot series of either Pfizer, and Pfizer starts with a P, Pfizer, or Moderna, two-shot series, one shot, and then either 4 weeks later with, I think, Pfizer and Moderna, and 3 weeks later if you get the Pfizer. But I would not advise the one-shot Johnson & Johnson. Variety of reasons I'm not going to go into right now. I don't have time. But Pfizer or Moderna for your initial series. And if you haven't had it yet, my advice is do it. Get the vaccination. Don't be stupid. Get the vaccinations, Pfizer or Moderna. And then after 6 months, get the booster, which just means another shot, to boost your immunity. That's what booster means. It's the same shot, or maybe in Moderna's case, they might give half a shot. But nonetheless, it boosts your immunity up. And by immunity up, we mean the making of antibodies against the virus. That's all that means. You help your immune system fight off the virus if the virus comes to you. It stimulates your immune system for that. It makes sense to do that. We have much experience as physicians in this world for decades on the benefits of vaccinating against these viral illnesses, especially the ones that lead to potentially serious disease. We have lots of experience on that. As doctors. So, again, get the vaccine, either Pfizer or Moderna, and get a booster after 6 months. And in the near future, I suspect we're going to be hearing about when to get the next booster. So these are things to, because I suspect we'll need to have a booster periodically in our life, just like we do for other vaccinations that we get. That's my opinion, and thanks for listening about it. But another thing, by the way, I just got a notice from the Butte County Health Department that the volume, you know, people are kind of saying, in our country, you know, we're kind of get this flavor, and even Dr. Fauci saying, you know, wow, you know, people are like burning out against this, about what we got to do for this virus and stuff, you know? So, yeah, it's understandable. People want to get back to life as usual, you know? So, okay. And so since Omicron's a little less nasty, still some nasty. But can we kind of back off on some of this masks and stuff? And guess what? The CDC, the last I heard as of a couple days ago, was no. And I agree with them. And I think if you pin Dr. Fauci down, he's NIH, by the way, National Institute of Health. But we're getting tired of it. But guess what? Keep wearing the masks in public, I say. CDC says, and I say too, don't be stupid. Keep wearing the mask. It helps prevent spreading of the disease. And avoid crowds. Still. And that's what I say. That's what the CDC says. What worries me is more variants may happen if we throw caution to the wind and don't have our masks like we used to, and we don't avoid crowds like we used to help this pandemic, well, then we're going to have a rise in cases again, and more variants, and the variants, the next variant down the line, may not be so friendly as Omicron. It might be more unfriendly like Delta. I just worry about it. Well, for instance, Butte County Health Department, I just got a notice, two days ago, there, because of the volume, because of the number of positive COVID cases in our Butte County Health Department, because of the volume being so high over recent weeks, recent few weeks being so high, they were asking for if a doctor's office or a laboratory tested somebody positive, they were asking that within 1 hour, in order for them to stay on top of the pandemic in our area, they were mandating that within 1 hour you notify the health department that your positives. You know, so it was an ongoing notification of the health department, just an ongoing process, nonstop. You know. Hourly, I guess, notifying them hourly. Well, they said, you know what? Due to the volume of positives, we're gonna say it's not because of anything else, it's just because the volume's so damn high. We're gonna say, oops, so darn high. We're gonna go to every 24 hours. Within, you got to notify the health department within doctor's offices, et cetera, if you turn up a positive in your patient. You got to let the health department know within 24 hours, not 1 hour. Because of the volume was so dang high on the hourly thing, it got to be non-doable adequately. So the point there that I took on this was, thank you for telling me that, health department, but, oh, yeah, the volume's high now. A lot of people infected. So why? I tell you why people are backing off, because they're tired of this COVID thing. Be smart, though. I say, yes, all of us want the virus gone. Let's keep working together to try to slow it down as best we can, keep it as manageable as we can, so it doesn't beat us up too bad. As we go on in time and we see how it develops out over time. So in other words, I say continue masking. I say exactly like the CDC says, continue masking, continue avoiding crowds. That's my advice. That's the CDC's advice as well. Well, now what should I do? I know I might have a little bitty bit of time left. I was going to throw in something real quick.
Yeah, you've got time left.
Okay. Hey, you know what? I know I've said this before, but this is just, I'm going to enumerate who healthcare providers are. You know, I'm a doctor. I'm a family doctor. I'm an MD. But when you get at, including your primary care provider, what category of licensure or credentials can you have a primary care provider of? Well, it could be an MD, like me, a physician MD. It could be a DO, which is just like, for all practical purposes, we're about the same. We're the same, MD and DO, doctor of osteopathy or medical doctor. Think of them synonymously. Or your primary care provider could be a N as in Nathan or Nancy, ND, or doctor of naturopathic medicine, or a nurse practitioner, or a physician assistant. So those are things I wanted to say, and I'll tell you more about those categories and their training and all that kind of thing in a future show, probably, if you want me to. If you want to have me cover a subject on this show, please email me at klogan.md@yahoo.com. And And the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, KZFR supporters, and by Mountain Sports. For over 45 years, providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. and 11 to 4 on Sunday at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico. I'm going to tell you that the views and opinions on this show are mine. They do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. And I think you all, thank Megan Hammer for engineering the Doctor's Inn. Thank you, Megan Hammer.
Thank you.
And stay tuned for Planetary Radio. And let's listen to, let's listen to Dr. Wu by Steely Dan. See you in a month.
Side of no tomorrow. You walked in and my life began again. Just when I'd spent the last piaster I could borrow. All night
shadow of the man that I once knew. She saving the world.